big family. I'm the each child of a family of 10 children. And
recording.
Oh no. my parents, they were very religious, and they considered every child as a blessing to their conjugal relationship. So every child was welcome, not like some people said, you know, or maybe they didn't know what they were doing, you know, so many children. And they also tried to educate their flock, you know, of children in a way that they would be dedicated to God. So they made quite few sacrifices, because my father was the one who was also earning for this big family, and they sent four of my brothers to a priest seminar, because they were hoping they can offer a child to God. And they sent four other children to nuns and monk school, you know. So also myself, I was in a nun school, and we had different experiences with these church people, you know, good and bad, you know, different experiences with these Catholic church peoples. So some of my, anyway, myself, I was happy. I was happy to go to this nun school. It had the same loving spirit what I had at home, you know. It was like a unity, united, so I felt very fine. And I even, also this joyous spirit, you know, of these nuns, you know, they were loving us, really, from their heart, so dedicated, you know, that I also considered, you know, become a nun, you know. We are so happy people. And but then we moved when I was 12 to a suburb, and then I went first time in the normal school, you know, boys and girls, and also I realized, wow, completely different spirit, you know. I mean, there was not this loving Christian spirit there. I mean, children, they teased each other, and also there was still the tradition that teachers, you know, they gave God a boost, you know. Usually the boys got it, but still, you know, still I was shocked, you know, because no hitting in my family. Oh, sometimes my brothers, they got something from my father, but very seldom. So I was quite shocked. I was very homesick to this nun school. Anyway, my family and the new church community, Catholic church community, they gave me the strength to go on. And especially this one priest in this new church community, I think he helped me really, so God worked with him also to prepare us actually for meeting through parents. So he did many controversial things in the Catholic Church, you know. So, and one thing of it was that he introduced to us young ones, you know, Zen meditation, you know. He said, don't tell, you know, don't spread the word, but I would like to introduce you Zen meditation. So we gathered in this new church building, and we sat also there. The Lotus sit, he explained about Zen meditation, and that we should try to look at our mind, and so according, you know, Zen meditation, I guess, he learned or he studied, we should try to look at our mind and see what thoughts are flowing through our mind, and should send them off, and should try to empty ourselves completely, like, and prepare ourselves like a bride who is waiting for her bridegroom, also to meet her bridegroom, to meet in that case as a God, you know. So, and this, then we did some walks, you know, because our legs got really stiff. We were not used, you know, to sit on the floor and in this lotus sit, like the Orientals. So we did the walk through the church, then we sat down again. Sometimes there was with the stick, you know, to to somehow encourage us, you know, not to fall asleep anyway. We couldn't, because painful to sit on the floor. It was very interesting for me, because even after this meditation, when I went out and in normal life, I was so sharply aware what I was thinking, you know, so sharply aware what goes on in my mind. The first time, somehow, I was completely, what were rushing back and forth in my mind. I could clearly see what I'm thinking, you know. It was somehow experience for me. I knew that we have a spirit in our body, but also I realized that I have to be very aware if I want to receive God or welcome God, then I have to be aware what's going on in my mind also, you know. So I have to be... one time then I did this Zen meditation at home, and I had this amazing experience. After, it was early in the morning, right after I woke up. I didn't have yet much give and take with anything in the day. So I did this Zen meditation, and then shortly before I finished, suddenly I saw, I was completely awake, you know, but in this meditative state. Then I saw very clearly this picture what we draw in Divine Principle when we explain resurrection, you know, how man should grow through the three stages and then fall, and then going through Old, New Testament, completed Testament up. And then above this stage, there was suddenly this, wow, this incredible light ball, you know. And I realized, oh, wow, actually, man was supposed to melt together with God, you know. Somehow the conclusion came, man was never actually supposed to become this primitive creature who are fighting about food and territory, you know. That was really a result also of that fall, actually. So it was a wonderful feeling somehow when God really came and somehow revealed to me, you know, that's supposed to be, you know, that is what is was my wish, that I'm in oneness in mind and body with the creation, with man. And so I had this. These milestones somehow what prepared me, this upbringing. Of course, my parents, they had the philosophy of, based on Jesus' words, you know, what you do to the poorest under you, you have done to me. So my parents also, they somehow practiced this actively. Also, there was never a beggar, you know, who were a lot that time after the war, who couldn't get the soup or something from us, you know, even though we always had many children in the house who were always hungry. But there was always something for them when they came to the door. Or we had these invalids, you know, after the war, who were having these musicals and collecting,
like
money.
Music box.
Yeah, so we always gave to them. And then, even so, we had the house full of children. Always my mother, she once or twice a week, she invited some blind people from the Blind Institute to come up to us, you know, we children entertain them a little bit, you know, and share love. Great. So it was somehow a very nice childhood. But then also one time... let me see. Then a few things in my life were, of course, very also forming. It was that my mother had to go early to the spirit world. She was only 48, And when I heard that she will die, my sister told me, and then I went to my room and cried, as you know, oh no. Then it was like some person came to me and put the arm around me. It was really physically nearly felt, even though there was nobody else in the room than me, and said, "Why do you cry?" You know. I said, "Well, my mother is dying and I will not have her. I'm only 15 and I need her and I, you know, I have, she's here for me and I cannot, you know, I cannot live without her." So then this voice said, "But why do you cry?" I said, "Well, I need her. But is it for her or is it for you?" I said, "Well, it's for me." So then this voice said very clear, but I think it's better you let her go for what she prepared herself. And then it was so somehow so comforting to me. Suddenly I realized, okay, it's not, there's somebody, you know, who knows exactly that she will go to the spirit world, and there's a reason, and there's a, she has something to do, you know. Yeah, so it was very interesting to have this experience also. And then another experience was when this priest, this controversial priest, he invited us for young ones. We were 12, actually, quite like the disciples. So we had these 12 disciples, and we went with him up the mountain in a quiet walk, you know, no talking, prayer walk. And then we had bread and some juice, I think, not wine, with us to have then some celebration, a little break in the night up there. So when we walked up there, then I asked myself, is God really here, you know, and is he with us, and so on, and somehow I tried to. So we walked and walked, and then suddenly I heard somebody say, very clear, "Roswitha." And I turned around and said, I thought, I wanted to say, "Hello, we are on a, you know, walk together, we should be quiet, you know." But there was nobody talking to me. It was, everybody was solemnly walking and meditative walking up the mountain, looking that they don't fall over the stones there the night. And so it was actually it was a spiritual calling in a sense. So what somehow made me also listen. Yeah. That we have not so much time, let's see. Then another thing was for me quite an experience, because my mother, she was at home. My father took her home before she died, and every evening, you know, before we went to bed, she said, "Oh, thank you, Papa, Father, that you were so loyal to me." And I found that. Bye-bye, if I don't wake up anymore. So she was somehow preparing to go. And also she was very believing in resurrection of the spirit when she, as a believer in Christ. So she said she doesn't want no black mourning mass, but she wants, we have white mass, and we all came to the funeral also in normal clothes. So it was actually, it reminded very much of a Sumba. It was very, not so sad, actually. But then my father, he had still many children at home, and he thought, I mean, Catholic belief, you are married until the death separates you. So it was... he had many children at home to care for, and I mean, he was only 60, you're almost age, something like this. So he was thinking, how can he hold these 10 children, you know, 8, 9 children, while they're still at home together, you know? There's a, women need it, you know, to be also working together with him to hold this crowd together. So he was praying, and then he remembered this letter what my mother once got from her friend who was never married, who was a committed pharmacist. And she once wrote to my mother that, you know, if she would have found such a good man, faithful man, he should have maybe also married. So then actually my father Yes. And can you imagine this woman, also Christian woman, but imagine this woman made a decision of marrying my father with 7 children or 8 children at home, you know. 3 of them in teenager age. And it's really, I mean, a great woman, you know, I must say. I must respect her for that. But I was a teenager, you know, and I was not saying thank you for anything. And I was thinking everything goes the wrong way. And I was a bit resentful, maybe mourning in some way, in a teenager way, my mother's death. So she had a hard time, you know. With me especially, maybe, because I took off a few times and slept. I didn't tell where I am, and my father tried to find out, where did I sleep? And I said, well, I cannot tell you if I need to go, need to leave again. So it was very hard for them. When I was at home, we always fought, and mainly about things about the Catholic, the religion, you know, about views. My mother and father, they were more emphasizing the, how do you say, education of heart, or some of the artistic intelligence, what you get through being a religious person or being in contact with God. And she was more ceremonial, you know. So when I didn't know when, what happens in the church, you know, then she said, what did you learn in school? So I was really, it was really every day a fight. Then I said to God, if there's anything in the Bible, you know, what tells me a solution to the generation conflict, then I would like to know that, or I would like to read it. So I was sitting down in my bed and was having my Bible. I prayed that, like that, and I opened the Bible. And what did I open? I opened this parable where Jesus tells about you don't put new wine in old wineskins, huh? And you don't put a new cloth, you know, on an old dress. You know? And so I thought, wow, that's an answer. That's for me the answer, because of course I compared my stepmother with the old wineskin and me with the new wineskin. And so I understood, okay, she built all her life, you know, an image of God, what she could relate to, what she could live with. So who am I, you know, young one, who want to fight against that all the time. I mean, she did a great deed to come to our family, to pick up all that work, to never get a thank you, and so then I'm the new wineskin. I don't need to adopt completely, you know, what she is believing. I can have the freedom also to look for the relationship to God, my way, you know. I can develop my relationship to God, what I can love, what I can live with. So from this day on, she was also so amazed, because somehow she was already anticipating that we have again a fight, but from this day on, we never fought. Somehow from this passage, what God gave me there, I could somehow have a parental heart, a parental attitude towards myself and towards my mother. So I was guided in many ways, and then I had this one dream also, short before I was witnessed to. And there I had a dream of my own mother, and I was walking, and I had my mother like a cloth, you know, over my arm, you know, I was walking like that, and I was wondering, why do I carry my mother here over my arm, you know, like a cloth? And I called, there was nobody around, no flower, nothing, just a rock, you know, pathway. And I called some shady person, I said, hello, where should I bring my mother? You know, I feel I should bring my mother somewhere. So they said, no, go this direction. So I walked this way, then I came to the end of that path, and there was a fairy park, all kinds of, prata. Huvipuisto. Fairgrounds, I would say.
Amusement park.
Amusement park, okay. And so I was wondering, what do I do with my mother here on this amusement park? You know, it doesn't seem to be right. You know, I must have missed some place on the way, you know. And so I just ate a sausage. There was a sausage then, I ate sausage, and then I walked back, and then I found the entrance to a place that was beautiful with candlelight and very cozy, you know, somehow very cozy. So I felt, oh, here we can make a stop there. I felt she will be comfortable. So 2 days later, I was witness to, and I missed the train, and then I went. What do? I went to a kiosk to eat a sausage, what I never usually do. And after that, my spiritual mother came up and said, what do you think is the meaning of life? I said, well, I think to practice the thing what Jesus was teaching, but it's kind of difficult. I tried it with my best friend, Heide, with whom I lived together. And we served enthusiastically each other and tried to live a real, and discussed about God and so. And then it's somehow enthusiasm goes out the door again. So my spiritual mother, she just looked at me, Brigitte Plöchel. And she didn't see anything, you know. Ah, she said. And she turned around and walked up the stairs. And said, interesting, that person, you know. First she asked me something, I answered. She doesn't say anything, she just walks up the stairs. So I followed her. You know? Where do you go? No, you can come with me. So I came to the center. And there my other sister, actually, she was teaching principle to me. My spiritual mother was beside there praying and falling asleep between, so tired because she walked many, many conditional walks, you know, she was very active witnesser and best witnesser. And when they told my principal, I was so amazed, you know, about all these answers. So I had many questions, of course, because, for example, I said to myself, when Jesus, you know, became this person who melted together with God, you know, who was Messiah. But actually, what did change after Jesus was on earth, you know? What did practically change? People still steal, kill each other, wars are on. So what did change? Maybe I wished some external change, like maybe the Jewish people, you know, that things really change, you know, after the Messiah is on earth. And so I couldn't figure out what actually changed when Jesus was here. Yes, I believe that he made this that unity with God. And then actually through the principle afterwards, when I heard principle, I came to understand the relationship to God changed. Jesus could brought us the relationship, or introduced the relationship as father-child, what Jewish people didn't have. I didn't know, because I was not a Jew, and I didn't know. They had just a master-servant relationship. So it was that new relationship to God what was opened. But on the other hand, I thought, what actually, how can he, how should, we all should go there, or we all should get there, so how should this be happening? And so this also then, through the principle, it came, became so clear, no? Because the so blessed families, no? So the family, like Barbara today said, no? Family is the first and the last, so everything solved through the family. No? So that was many interesting answers I got. And when I, after I heard the principle, then I went, of course, still to Sunday service, because in Catholic Church it's a
commandment.
Yeah, it's a sin not to go Sunday service. In Lutheran Church you don't have that, you go when you feel like, but in Catholic Church it's a duty. So I said to my, to Peter Koch, I said, well, I would like to go, I understand principle, yes, but I would like to go Sunday service. He said, yeah, go Sunday service, that's very good. And so I went to Sunday service, and when we had the Holy Communion, then I spoke to Jesus. I said, well, I believe that you are now with me. Can I ask you, what do you think about the principle, what I heard now? Then I came straight the answer. Somehow, why do you still ask? So it was so clear, you know, for me. And shall I continue stay here? A little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
What did you say?
10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's, I think, enough. Do you have any question?
Question? Yeah, what happened to your four brothers?
Oh, two, they kind of separated from the church. They had enough. This was too narrow-minded, you know. Convent, they were in really convent and away from home, and I mean that cost it all, you know. My parents really tried their best, but they became all good fathers, though, family fathers, yeah. And but there were very different views also in the Catholic Church, no? The first thing what I was based and understood clear, yeah, because in the Catholic Church, somehow it was in the Catechism, it's taught that the angels fell and the men somehow fell, then, you know. But I understood when she taught the fall of man, yeah, the angel and man, they fell together, you know. Somehow this came to me clear more recently, actually, now, that God wanted so desperately somehow to establish Adam and Eve as true parents because he wanted to have a voice, yeah? He wanted to have a hand to embrace others, he wanted to have you know, he wanted to have a body to express his love, you know, to the next generation. And then if Adam and Eve would have become one with God, then their children, they would have, that, yeah, God loves like our parents, you know. There would be no problem with trust, you know. Trust is something what is so precious somehow, but we are always in the back of our mind, we are suspicious. We are in this fallen world because our trust was misused. I mean, Lucifer, he said, you will be like God, you know, if you do like I say. Of course, the children wanted to be like their parents. They wanted to be like God. But he telling a lie. How? So... I'm sorry.
What was the answer
to this question?
One more point.
I'm not getting the point. So
what I, from the principle, understood deeper.
So it means the fall?
Yeah.
The fall.
Then why God was so interested to have, to create and to have true parents established.
Mm.
And resurrection, that was the very important lecture for me. Resurrection.
Not resurrection.
That's what you saw in the beginning.
Yes, yeah.
When I hear this testimony, like, for example, many people have experienced when God speaks to them or angels speak. Mm. You know, I never have this experience. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's much easier when somebody speaks to you and you're quite sure it was God or angel or whatever. Mm. But I think if you're thinking to restore the rest of the world, I don't think that the rest of the world will have this experience, so they're more or less non-local. For me, the personal experience when I hear that God has spoken is through people, you know, like if I had something, I didn't share with anyone, and then somebody approached and offered something exactly what I need, so that's my experience. Mm. But my question is, could you bring an example when you had a situation where you had to decide something and nobody spoke to you? So how you figured which was your way or the God's way, or I mean, what was the right thing? I don't mean to
answer maybe two parts. As the first part, I think many of the first disciples of the beginning of the movement, they were more like these spiritual preparations. But actually, when the movement grows, or when there are more people who are united, supposedly united with true parents or not the prince, actually, then all of us should be arms and legs and mouth, you know. So we should experience God through each other. You know, we should anticipate that God speaks to us through my husband, through my brother. If I have a question, you know, then God has many ways to answer. In the beginning, when you hear the testimonies from the first members especially, they had incredible experiences, you know, spiritual experiences. But I think it's not that needed, you know, because actually the idea, or God's idea, is that we are his body, you know. So we should anticipate to hear God from others, or to be aware that maybe God wants to say something to that person, or want to nourish that original mind of that person whom I just meet. You understand? I mean, we had one brother, for example, in the center. He couldn't speak straight. He had stutter. Very pure, very beautiful carpenter. I really liked him. And I had a very deep, somehow, question. I wanted to understand God. I said to God, if I would understand your pain, the pain of your heart, you know, from the fall, then I could really understand you. Maybe, but how can I, you know, understand that? And then we were in a gathering, and then this brother actually stuttered and answered without me asking that question and said, yes, we always want to understand everything about God, you know, even the most deepest feelings or somehow there. But actually, we should first enjoy and thank God and enjoy the nature, what he created, you know, and I thought, wow, that's actually wonderful. This I can do. I can develop my heart. I became admirer of the creation, you know, because it's a beautiful work of art and a beautiful work of love, what God's created for us, the surrounding. And then the second, what was the second one? When you have something to decide.
Yes, okay,
and how?
It's easy for you. You have a blessed husband given by true parents. If he says something you don't like, it's easy, pretty easy. By principle, by anything, you have to unite. And you have to love this person. But I mean, there are different situations, you know, when nobody speaks to you, no God, no people, and you don't know how to decide. You don't feel anything. So how you decide, and that has nothing to do with principle, because, you know, both ways are good or bad. So how do you figure what is good?
Not easy.
Yes,
everyday battle.
Easy.
Everyday battle.
Yeah,
also I have not always the answers.
And
also sometimes you learn through mistakes.
Okay,
but that's not
it's
so.
Not like you feel anything in your heart or pray.
Yeah.
I'm not interested to hear angel came.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was preparation actually to meet true parents. And somehow I felt, when I came to the center then to hear principle, you know, and there were many clear answers. I mean, I felt like I came home, somehow the feeling I came home. And I thought, where does feeling come from? Maybe from all this, or my mother, or, you know, from all these spirits who wanted, you know, who worked hard to guide me there. So somehow, then I said, well, I don't need any more dreams, you know. I'm on the right place. I said to God, you know, this energy, what was used, you know, to prepare me, you know, I don't need it now. I remember, I'm on the right place. You can use this energy and dreams, you know, for other people to prepare them, you know. So I never had much dreams after that, you know. But, I mean, I had the principle, so.
Did you meet your parents several times?
Sometimes, yeah.
Several
times, yes.
Can you tell us something?
Well, the most deep experience or crucial experience was in England, and we met Father every Sunday in a hometown mission. A hometown mission was really a stress, somehow such a big challenge because I. I'm sorry, what did I say?
Hometown.
Ah, yeah, home church mission. And it was a stress, you know, for me to disturb people, to knock on people's doors and ask them if I can clean their garden or take care of the children or whatever. I was young and, you know, shy. And but always when on Sunday we came together and Father talked after pledge service, I felt, however difficult this mission is, but still I feel I belong. This is my clan, you know. These are my people. So it was somehow commitment to Father and crew. And one time, then Father said also, that was very liberating for me. He said, oh, I completed now this 21-year course, what it was personally, in 17 years. That was that time in England. And actually, now when you all get here, you're all my children. And you might not be all good children, but you're all my children. You know, and that was so liberating to me because I felt so, you know, so unable to do my mission and all that. So I felt so happy. So for some weeks I brought many guests. And thought, oh, it's okay, I'm not a good child, but I'm, you know, still God, Father said I'm a child of him. So I was very, very happy. And then the third, maybe also very wonderful experience was the matching. when the father walked around the first day, not everybody arrived yet, and I felt, oh, I said, that's a hard job for Father. So he walks around for hours talking to us and not matching a soul yet. So I heard that he matches quickly, you know. So I thought, we are a hard bunch to match. So then I already got so tired, my eyes nearly fell asleep because Father walking, talking, no matching. Then at the end he said, who would be willing to also be matched with Oriental? So, I mean, he talked now 3 hours about it, how good it is to unite West and East and so. So I raised my hand, you know. So Father said, also I thought, they all look a bit like, you know, Father, so this marriage goes well, I'm sure. So Father said, it was 5 sisters or something. So Father said, come here, sit down here. And also we sat down near Father's feet. And then he caught my thought. He said, well, you think they look a lot like me because this Oriental eyes and so on, Japanese and... But I tell you, it's much more difficult to be married with them than to be a Westerner. We were all Westerners. So then we sat down again. Then he asked after some time again, now who would like to be blessed with an Oriental? So then 2 sisters dared to raise their hand. I wasn't. I thought, well, I leave it all up to Father now. I trust Father, you know. What he gives me, because I want that it's what God wants. So then Father started to match. Wash the next day in the morning, Father matched. Whoa, the place emptied, and I was still sitting there. Everything empty. Oh wow, maybe I'm not. Also, he asked once all the people who don't feel worthy. Also, who don't think that they're ready, you know, they should go out. I said, shall I go out? Shall I go out? I mean, who is ready, you know? So I said, well, I don't think anybody is ready here, so I stay. Suddenly, a father came to walk very near to me. I had my hand. I was sitting on the floor, and I had my hand. Father stepped on my hand. Wonderful Messiah stands on my hand. But it didn't hurt. But it was like nailing me down. And then he conversed. I felt he was conversing with my spirit world, and I said to myself, I want to be open like a book. I know what I did and what I did not, and what was right and what was wrong. And now, and as soon as I said, finished the thought, I want to be open like a book to you. I wanted you, if it can serve to restore something or to be a part of the restoration, I want to be available. And as soon as I finished that thought, my father said, come on. Come on. He pointed at Yorma. Yorma was sitting, like always, nearly, in the last row. And then he still, when Father pointed at him, he looked, who is behind me? Nobody. So it must be me. Yorma got up, and we went outside, and we didn't communicate much. No? Yeah. We just said from what country we are, and then you said studied. I said, well, yes, some brain. So then we went in and bowed, and it was a good match, I think.
So, if I can say something, we want to make this kind of a tradition that we would have once a month this kind of testimony time, and we are very welcome.